Chapter 5. How thoughts form matter. Coordination points. As you read the words upon this page, you realize that the information that you are receiving is not an attribute of the letters of the words themselves. The printed line does not contain information. It transmits information. Where is the information that is being transmitted then, if it is not upon the page? The same question, of course, applies when you read a newspaper, and when you speak to another person. Your actual words convey information, feelings, or thoughts. Obviously, the thoughts or the feelings, and the words, are not the same thing. The letters upon the page are symbols, and you have agreed upon various meanings connected with them. You take it for granted without even thinking of it that the symbols, the letters, are not the reality, the information or thoughts, which they attempt to convey. Now, in the same way, I am telling you that objects are also symbols that stand for reality, whose meaning the objects, like the letters, transmit. The true information is not in the objects any more than the thought is in the letters or in words. Words are methods of expression. So are physical objects in a different kind of medium. You are used to the idea that you express yourselves directly through words. You can hear yourself speak them. You can feel the muscles in your throat move. And if you are aware, you can perceive multitudinous reactions within your own body, actions that all accompany your speech. Physical objects are the result of another kind of expression. You create them as surely as you create words. I do not mean that you create them with your hands alone, or through manufacture. I mean that objects are natural byproducts of the evolution of your species, even as words are. Examine for a moment your knowledge of your own speech, however, though you hear the words and recognize their appropriateness, and though they may more or less approximate an expression of your feeling, they are not your feeling, and there must be a gap between your thought and your expression of it. The familiarity of speech begins to vanish when you realize that you, yourself, when you begin a sentence, do not know precisely how you will end it, or even how you form the words. You do not consciously know how you manipulate a staggering pyramid of symbols, picking from them precisely those you need to express a given thought. For that matter, you do not know how you think. You do not know how you translate these symbols upon this page into thoughts, and then store them, or make them your own. Since the mechanisms of normal speech are so little known to you on a conscious level, then it is not surprising that you are equally unaware of more complicated tasks that you also perform, such as the constant creation of your physical environment as a method of communication and expression. It is only from this viewpoint that the true nature of physical matter can be understood. It is only by comprehending the nature of this constant translation of thoughts and desires, not into words now, but into physical objects, that you can realize your true independence from circumstance, time, and environment. Now, it is easy to see that you translate feelings into words or bodily expressions and gestures, but not quite as easy to realize that you form your physical body as effortlessly and unselfconsciously as you translate feelings into symbols that become words. You have heard the expression before, I am sure, that the environment expresses a particular individual's personality. I am telling you that this is a literal and not symbolic truth. The letters upon the page have the reality only of ink and paper. The information they convey is invisible. As an object, this book itself is only paper and ink. It is a carrier of information. You may perhaps argue that the book was manufactured physically, and did not suddenly erupt through Rupert's skull, already printed and bound. You in turn had to borrow or purchase the book, so you may think, surely, I did not create the book, as I created my words. But before we are finished, we will see that, basically speaking, each of you create the book you hold in your hands, and that your entire physical environment comes as naturally out of your inner mind as words come out of your mouths, and that man forms physical objects as unselfconsciously and as automatically as he forms his own breath. The peculiar, particular aspects of your physical world are dependent upon your existence and focus within it. The physical universe does not contain physical objects of solidity, width and depth, for example, to those whose existence is not within it. Other kinds of consciousness coexist within the same space that your world inhabits. They do not perceive your physical objects, for their reality is composed of a different camouflage structure. You do not perceive them, and generally speaking, they do not perceive you. This is a general statement, however, for various points of your realities can and do coincide, so to speak. These points are not recognized as such, but they are points of what you could call double reality, containing great energy potential. Coordinate points. Indeed, where realities merge, there are main coordinate points, pure mathematically, sources of fantastic energy, and subordinate coordinate points, vast in number. There are four absolute coordinate points that intersect all realities. These coordinate points also act as channels through which energy flows, and as warps or invisible paths from one reality to another. They also act as transformers, and provide much of the generating energy that makes creation continuous in your terms. Your space is filled with these subordinate points, and as you will see later, these are important in allowing you to transform thoughts and emotions into physical matter. When a thought or emotion attains a certain intensity, it automatically attracts the power of one of these subordinate points, and is therefore highly charged, and in one way magnified, though not in size. These points impinge upon what you call time, as well as space. There are certain points in time and space, therefore, again in your terms, that are more conducive than others, where both ideas and matter will be more highly charged. Practically speaking, this means that buildings will last longer. In your context, that ideas wedded to form will be relatively eternal. The pyramids, for example, are a case in point. These coordinate points, absolute, main, or subordinate, represent accumulations or traces of pure energy, minute to an extreme if you are thinking in terms of size, smaller than any particle of which your scientists know, for example, but composed of pure energy. And yet this energy must be activated. It is dormant until then, and it cannot be activated physically. A few clues here that might help you, or mathematicians. There is an ever so minute alteration of gravity forces in the neighborhood of all of these points, even of the subordinate ones, and all the so-called physical laws to some extent or another will be found to have a wavering effect in these neighborhoods. The subordinate points also serve in a way as supports, as structural intensification within the unseen fabric of energy that forms all realities and manifestations. While they are traces or accumulations of pure energy, there is a great difference between the amount of energy available in the various subordinate points, and between the main and the absolute points. These are points, therefore, of concentrated energy. The subordinate points are far more common, and practically speaking, affect your daily concerns. There are better places than others to build houses or structures, points where health and vitality are strengthened, where, other things being equal, plants will grow and flourish, and where all beneficial conditions seem to meet. Some people can sense such neighborhoods instinctively. They occur within certain angles made by coordinate points. The points obviously are not themselves physical. That is, they are not visible, though they may be mathematically deduced. They are felt, however, as intensified energy. In a given room, plants will grow more effectively in a particular area than in other areas, providing that both areas contain such necessary requirements as light. All of your space is permeated by these coordination points, so that certain invisible angles are formed. This is highly simplified, but some angles will be more on the outskirts than others, and will be less favorable for all conditions of growth and activity. In speaking of these angles, we will treat them as three-dimensional, though they are of course multidimensional. Since the nature of these angles is not the main topic of my book, it is not possible to explain them thoroughly here. They will seem to be stronger during certain times than other times, though these differences have nothing to do with either the nature of the coordinate points or with the nature of time. Other elements affect them, but we need not be concerned with these now. The concentrated energy points are activated by emotional intensities that are well within your normal range. Your own emotions or feelings will activate these coordinates, whether you know of them or not. Greater energy will therefore be added to the original thought or feeling, and its projection into physical matter accelerated. Now this applies regardless of the nature of the feeling, only its intensity is involved here. These points are like invisible power plants. In other words, activated when any emotional feeling or thought of sufficient intensity comes into contact. The points themselves intensify whatever activates them in a quite neutral manner. This is highly simplified, but the subjective experience of any consciousness is automatically expressed as electromagnetic energy units. These exist beneath the range of physical matter. They are, if you prefer, incipient particles that have not yet emerged into matter. These units are natural emanations from all kinds of consciousness. They are the invisible formations resulting from reaction to any kind of stimuli. They very seldom exist in isolation, but unite under certain laws. They change both their form and their pulsation. Their relative duration depends upon the original intensity behind them. That is, behind the original thought, emotion, stimuli, or reaction that brought them into being. Again, highly simplified here, under certain conditions, these coagulate into matter. Those electromagnetic units of high enough intensity automatically activate the subordinate coordinate points of which I have spoken. They are, therefore, accelerated and propelled into matter far more quickly, in your terms, than units of lesser intensity. Molecules would appear as large as planets to these units. Atoms and molecules and planets and these electromagnetic energy units are simply different manifestations of the same principles that bring the units themselves into being. It is only your relative position, your focus within an apparent space and time, that makes this seem so unlikely. Each thought or emotion therefore exists as an electromagnetic energy unit or as a combination of these under certain conditions, and often with the help of coordinate points, they emerge into the building blocks of physical matter. This emergence into matter occurs as a neutral result regardless of the nature of any given thought or emotion. Mental images, accompanied by strong emotion, are blueprints therefore upon which a corresponding physical object, or condition or event, will in your terms appear. The intensity of a feeling or thought or mental image is, therefore, the important element in determining its subsequent physical materialization. The intensity is the core about which the electromagnetic energy units form. In your terms, the more intense the core, the sooner the physical materialization. This would apply whether the mental image was a fearful one or a joyful one. Now there is a very important problem here. If your turn of mind is highly intense and you think in vivid mental emotional images, these will be swiftly formed into physical events. If you are also of a highly pessimistic nature, given to thoughts and feelings of potential disaster, then these thoughts will be quite faithfully reproduced in experience. The more intense your imagination and inner experience, therefore, the more important it is that you realize the methods by which this inner experience becomes physically real. Your thoughts and emotions begin their journey into physical actualization at the moment of conception. If you happen to live in an area where the coordinate environment is strong, one of those areas I have spoken of as unusually conducive, then it will seem that you are deluged by illnesses or disasters, if these are the nature of your thoughts, because all thought is so fertile in this environment. If, on the other hand, your feelings and subjective experience are fairly well balanced, fairly optimistic and creative in a constructive manner, then it will seem to you that you have been blessed with unusual luck, for your pleasant suppositions will come to pass so quickly. Briefly, in your own country, the West Coast, portions of the East Coast, Utah, the Great Lakes, the Chicago area, the Minneapolis area, and some other southwestern areas, are in those neighborhoods of excellent coordinate activity, for the reasons given. Materialization will quickly appear, and potentials therefore for both constructive and destructive elements are high. These coordinate points themselves activate the behavior of atoms and molecules as, say for example, the sun aids the growth of plants. The coordinates activate the generating behavior of atoms and molecules, and greatly encourage their cooperative abilities, their tendency to swarm, so to speak, into organizations and structural groupings. The coordinate points magnify or intensify the behavior, the latent spontaneity inherent within the properties of physical matter. They act as psychic generators, propelling what is not yet physical into a physical form. Now, this is not to be a technical book, so this is not the time nor place to discuss thoroughly the action, behavior or effects of these coordinate points, nor of the electromagnetic energy units, those natural emanations of consciousness of which I spoke. I want it known, however, that thoughts and emotions are formed into physical matter by very definite methods and through laws quite valid, though they may be presently unknown. In other portions of the Seth material, these processes will be made very clear for those of you who desire to pursue the question further, or those who may be interested from a scientific point of view. Here, we are discussing such issues only because they touch upon the multidimensional aspect of personality. They allow you to materialize certain subjective experiences into three-dimensional reality. Before I leave the subject, however, let me remind you that these emanations in varying degrees rise from all consciousness, not simply your own. This includes cellular consciousness as well, so that an invisible network of electromagnetic units pervades your entire atmosphere, and upon this web work and from it, the particles of physical matter are then formed. A whole book could easily be written upon this subject. Information regarding the locations of main and absolute coordinate points could be highly advantageous. For example, you pride yourselves on your technology and the production of durable goods, buildings and roads, yet many of these are insignificant when compared to other structures within the past. A true understanding of the way in which an idea becomes physical matter would result in a complete revamping of your so-called modern technology, and in buildings, roads, and other structures that would far outlast those you now have. While the psychic reality behind physical matter is ignored, then you cannot use those methods effectively that do exist, nor can you take advantage of them. You cannot understand the psychic reality that is the true impetus for your physical existence unless you first realize your own psychic reality and independence from physical laws. My first purpose, therefore, is to make you aware of the inner identity of which you are part, and to clear away some of the intellectual and superstitious debris that prevents you from recognizing your own potentialities and freedom. Then perhaps you can begin to learn the many ways in which that freedom can be used.